You're listening to the Lean Built Podcast. I'm Jay.
And I'm Andrew. In this podcast, we discuss our manufacturing companies, lean principles,
and the freedom that we're pursuing in life and business.
So how are things in California, Jay?
Yeah, it's really good. We're really leaning into the whole lights out. It's the way to go. The EC400 is just cranking out parts. I've considered just getting rid of two VF2s and then going with another EC400 and loading it up with our horizontal pallet systems right now. So keep in mind, we have our horizontal, which typical horizontal has two tables, essentially. They call them pallets. And so there's really no idle spindle time while you change out parts. Then we have a six station pallet pool. So You have a total of seven pallets. So what we've done is we've opted to go with two of our horizontal pallet systems and just sink Tombstone with four PPSs on it. So eight total PPSs. And then the other four pallets, Haas pallets, we have Rotovices, and it's great. Mm-hmm. But we are just really revamping everything in the shop. So those pesky jobs that are low volume, okay, we make 60 of these a year. We'll just throw it in a vise or a double vise. Like, those days are over. Like, why do we need to make 60 per year? Let's just make 120 every couple of years and just dedicate a set of pallets so that they come out finished in the morning, op one, op two. We've got a machinist that's leaving, moving out of state, and we've kind of been strategizing that, like, do we need to hire a new person? Conventional thinking would say yes, or do we just stay with the current crew and then invest in automation and probably like a part-time person? And there's plenty of machine shops. Actually, within a 5-mile radius, there's probably 20 machine shops. So I think it'd be an easy sell. Just reach out to some of these places and just say, hey, if you've got a guy that just wants a few extra dollars and you like him and, you know, you can't afford to pay him overtime, send him our way. We're not here to scalp people. We just want to give 1 or 2 hours of extra time to a guy that could do the quote unquote grunt work of unloading and unloading Tombstones. Yep. So that's the strategy I think we're going to go. There's a 2022 used UMC 500 with a 10 station and pallet pool that would be great for 10 Rotovices. Either our Max 4, which is currently released, Max 4 pallet system, or our Max 5, which is a larger pallet system, a lot more robust, which is specifically for 5-axis machines coming out late summer. Mm-hmm. Just making sure that we can maximize our capacity, and our shop is open a third of a 24-hour period. Why are machines not running
all the rest?
3/3. Exactly. So that's kind of the strategy we're going. It would only be a fearful decision for me to say, no, I don't want to do that, because if we scrap parts, we scrap 24 hours of parts, or at least 16 hours. Mm-hmm. But we try and stay away from those fear-based decisions. So that's what's cooking around here.
So my first question is, if you hire a part-time outside guy to be your pallet wizard, How do you successfully incorporate him into your company culture, or do you treat that as unimportant for that role?
It feels like an island role where he would be here at the tail end of our shift, where He's here for 2 hours, because we do have split shifts right now. The guys are off by 2 hours. So we have a total of 10 hours of in-shop time. And so he would be at the end of the first shift, and he would go home with the rest of us. He's just going to be hustling the whole time. He's not going to be talking to anyone. There's no decisions to be made. It's just unload these parts, put this raw stock in it, and then you can clock out. That type of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I've not thought about that kind of position in our shop ever, but I'm sure at some point we'll have those kinds of decisions to make. For us, our bar-fed Doosan Lay has been making parts this week, which is really fun.
Bar feeder too?
Yep, bar feeder. Auto feeding, dropping ends, and just making parts. It's a fairly small, lightweight aluminum part. And what we were finding is we were having some issues with them not making it from the parts tray onto the parts conveyor, not making it from the parts catcher onto the conveyor. We were bouncing some off, and they were ending up in the scrap bin.
Very common, by the way.
Yeah. So I think we actually, Chris 3D printed a little angle modifier thing to give us a little more flexibility on the infeed and not have it catch on the lip that it was catching on. It's a small tri-lobe knob for competition holsters. We call it turbo prop. And it's, depending on how it encounters the edge as it comes out of the parts catcher, it can sort of catch and fall back down.
Sure.
So we've been troubleshooting that, and I've been picking a bunch of parts out of the scrap bin, but it's life. We're learning the ins and outs of running this machine, and so far it's been going really well. I'm very happy with it. I am mostly used to the spindle ramp up, ramp down sound as it adjusts itself automatically to keep constant surface feet. That's not a thing I'm used to hearing from mills.
Right.
And so
yeah,
I'm mostly acclimatized to it. I'm not getting weirded out by it anymore, but it definitely is a different flavor in the air.
Oh, sure. So, okay, let me go back to the parts catcher. There's two reasons that we've identified why parts don't get caught and dumped onto the conveyor successfully. Number one is that it's a light part. That's what it sounds like in your scenario, where it just doesn't have that oomph, that momentum, that kinetic energy, where when the parts catcher stops at the box or the opening, it just doesn't come out.
Yeah. A small lightweight part with coolant on it can just sort of ring to the surface of the inside of the parts catcher and not fly out.
So that's the first one. The other one, what we have experienced is we have like our lock rings. If you look at our pallet systems, we have our lock rings. They're just under 2-inch diameter. They're heavy. They're hardened stainless. Those, it's definitely surface tension because on the two sides, they're flat. So what we've had to do is either scuff up, because in the Doosan, the parts catcher, it should have some kind of like HDPE plastic or something. I don't know if yours is the same. Or is it metal?
I'd have to check. I've mostly just walked by this machine and gone, oh, cool, it's running.
Yeah.
And have not spent a lot of time in front of it.
Yeah. So we tried a few different things over the years. First, we scuff up the material so it doesn't have as much of a flat surface. Then we tried gluing in. We got some, like a 12-inch square piece of thin film, but it was textured. It was almost like a plastic cutting board from McMaster. Okay. Cut that, glued it in. Didn't quite work. It's just right now until we solve the problem. We just, every morning when we go lights out, Armado takes a look through the scrap bin.
Gotcha.
So look, it's cheaper to throw away 10 parts per evening than to not go lights out. That's the thing.
Yes.
So
as much as in principle, zero waste, zero scrap is highly desirable.
Uh-huh.
The amount of things you have to be willing to give up if that's your ultimate goal.
Yep.
Is usually not an issue for most people. It's not really an issue for us most of the time, but there are some times when the only way to get 0% scrap on this job or that job is to slow everything down to a speed where we could have made two extra parts and been done so much sooner that the time cost would have offset the loss.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, we looked at cycle time on these lock rings. They're about 5 minutes from round bar to complete.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're losing about an hour of production if we don't go through the scrap bin. There's also, people don't realize there are compromises. And if there aren't, there should be compromises in a lights out machine. You don't want to go as aggressively.
Yeah.
Like we just go a little bit lighter on the feeds and speeds because you got to have that reliable process. We've broken tools like chipped inserts. It's just Murphy's Law, like on the day shift. And then it switches to the next tool, which is a VNMG finisher, which then gets destroyed. And then it goes into like an end mill that would have done a prismatic feature. And then we come back. And this, of course, it happens on the lunch break when my lead guy isn't there. And so we've got like four sawed off tools when we come back from lunch. But had we gone less aggressively a lot of times, it's never happened at night, knock on wood. So probably because we slow it down.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. So overall, what else are you learning about the lathe?
I'm really not spending that much time on it. I'm thinking about a bunch of other things. We're in the middle of doing a bunch of hiring right now.
Yep.
So I hired an office manager who will be starting in June. So that's a little bit of ways away. We've got a new machinist starting on Monday of this coming week.
Okay.
And he is coming from another much larger company in the firearms industry, has experience running horizontals and some older Doosan lathes. So he's going to be coming in and he's going to be taking over production on the lathe primarily initially. Okay. We don't have a ton of work lined up for that machine yet. So we don't have jobs to run every day for the next few weeks, but we still do have a lot of workflow and process standardization to figure out. We've got tool carts to finish organizing, storage things to work out, a whole bunch of stuff to label. But then we've got some inspection and metrology tool gaps to fill, specific things we might want for this or that job that we know we're going to run soon. So I'm very excited about that. We also have a production assembly employee starting in a couple weeks. She's moving back here from the East Coast. Her family's in Indiana. She just finished school in New York. She's coming back. But we're also hiring, and this is the still details to work out, but we're hiring in a couple more guys to augment our design department. And I'm really excited about that because that is a tremendous bottleneck. In my company is lights out for us is not even a consideration because we produce everything we need within the 8 hours that we're here.
Sure.
And we should be selling more. And to be selling more, we should be releasing more. And so I've had a few ideas. I've been bouncing around a lot of ideas. And one of the things that I really want to do, I had two realizations this past week that the first one is I tolerate a lot of problems with my current website that I would never tolerate for a second if those problems were present in a physical process in my shop. There are quirks and friction and weird interactions of menus and things. There's all kinds of stuff on the website that I don't like, that I don't want, that I can objectively see it's bad.
What's the platform, by the way?
We're on WooCommerce. It does what we need, but there are lots of places where there are still rough edges that aren't smoothed off.
Is it a bug issue or is it a capability issue?
It's not primarily bugs, but the more plugins you run to try to do different things, the more often you run into different things conflicting with each other. And what I was realizing, though, is it is okay for me to say as a goal, I want our website to be as world-class as the best processes that we've executed in our shop. And not say, the website's functional enough. Some customers manage to place their orders through it. It should be an incredible experience. Customers should come to it and be wowed by the experience of using the website. So that tells me that I've significantly under-resourced and underpaid attention to the website. And I don't know if the next step for that is to regularly pay for time for an outside web developer, somebody who's going to really be focused on handling those handful of persistent, difficult issues to solve and really spending a significant amount of time and money solving them. Or if we just need to bring somebody in who can spend part of their time on that in-house and part of their time on something else. Because I don't, we're not a huge e-commerce site with thousands of SKUs. We do not have full-time in-house web development work necessary. So recognizing that there's a lot of low-hanging fruit of problems that we could fix that would improve the customer experience, that would make it more enjoyable to shop our site and buy our stuff, was, that was an important thing for me this week. But the other one is that because I'm the design bottleneck in my company, I'm often very reluctant to tell anybody about what projects we're working on because I have no idea how soon I'm actually going to be able to get them done.
Is that intentional? Like you don't tell them?
Yeah, we don't publicize at all what things we're working on are going to be releasing. But and that's mostly because the second you announce what you're working on, people start emailing and saying, well, what's the ETA? I want a product like that, but if it's going to be 8 more months, I'm going to go buy from a competitor. If it's going to be 2 weeks from now, I'll wait. And the additional customer service burden that comes from essentially inviting people to email you for an ETA on a product that you don't know when you're going to release, it's stressful. It creates a lot of friction. It's unpleasant for me. It's disappointing for them. It's a great chance to damage your brand with somebody who's not even your customer yet.
It's a bad customer experience. I'm guilty of that. I put out a video in 2019 talking about, well, we've kind of released it. I worked on this design. Now it's the Max 4 and the soon to be released Max 5 because the design was not great for large machines and it wasn't great for small machines. And now it's had to be divided among two different sizes. And it took me years. Literally, this is a 5-year process of getting it out. I mean, it maybe 4 years. It came out last year. The Max 4 was released, soft launched last year. But yeah, it's not a great customer experience.
So what I've been thinking is, as we add more people to our design team, and that allows us to hopefully get a lot of the lower hanging fruit projects done sooner and start to delegate more of the initial process spin up jobs, hopefully that's going to mean that our design timeframe for new releases shortens consistently.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what I'd like to do, this is just an idea, haven't done it yet, but I want to be radically transparent with our potential customers and our current customers about what is actually on our development list. Mm-hmm. So the idea is a page on our website that is a, here's what's on the horizon. Here's what's up next. It's an alphabetical list of 10 to 15 upcoming projects. In our case, that's new holster fits. Like, we're going to offer a holster for the Walther PDP or the Walther PPQ or the Taurus GX4 carry or whatever it's going to be. And we have a list of those things. And the ground rules for this page are, nothing here is in order of priority. Mm-hmm. So don't look at the first thing on the list and go, that's coming next. This is alphabetical. Mm-hmm. Second thing is, nothing on this list is actually ever guaranteed to be released. At any point, we may decide to pivot away from one of these projects and not release it for any variety of reasons. So it's not a guarantee. Just because it's here, we're not promising we're going to make it, but we're actively working on it. And then the third thing is, there are no ETAs on any of this. We're not saying these are all coming in the next quarter, in the next 6 months, in the next year. Just, this is what we're working on.
Yeah.
But I want this page to have the ability for a customer to sign up, to check a box next to any products on that list that they're interested in, and then sign up one time with their email and have them be tagged in our email system, so that when any project that they expressed interest in is getting ready to be released, we can touch base with them again and say, hey, this is coming in the next 2 weeks, mm-hmm. or this is going to drop in the next 48 hours. And they can get a ahead of market notice before we publicly announce it on Instagram, YouTube, wherever. We can put the product page up, we can make the product live, but we haven't publicized it and told anybody about it yet. Mm-hmm. We can send a link out, even with a unique coupon code potentially, mm-hmm. for those pre-signed up customers. But this is not a pre-order. We're not taking any money up front. Mm-hmm. We're not taking any deposits. There's no hold your place in line.
It's just notification.
It's just notification.
Yeah.
But I had a customer email me. The real impetus for this was that I had a customer email me this week asking about a thing that is on our internal development list. Uh-huh. But he said, hey, I really want this. Are you ever going to offer that? And I said, we are. I don't have an ETA. And he goes, well, that's fine. I like your products and I'd like to buy that whenever it becomes available. Uh-huh. Can I get on an email notification list for when it gets closer? And I'm like, I really don't have a way to do that currently. Mm-hmm. And realizing that I don't have a way for customers who are interested to signal that to me in a durable way and give me permission to contact them back when the time comes,
yeah,
is such an obvious miss.
Mm-hmm. It's good you didn't recognize that though. Yeah.
And certainly not everyone who signs up on that email list, if we release the product 8 months from now, many of them will have already purchased an alternative product from somewhere else, or many of them will not be interested anymore. They will have bought a different carry gun or moved to different whatever. But it's an obvious thing. And I really like the idea of saying, here's what's coming. And then based on the number of people that signed up, we can actively reprioritize internally things that are on that list based on how much traction they get and how much interest is demonstrated by signups. Now, signups to purchases is not a one-to-one ratio. It's not a direct path. But certainly, if we've got one thing that's got 10 signups and one thing that's got 200, the chance that we convert more sales off the 200 signups is a virtual certainty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So you're thinking of doing like individual lists per the products you're developing?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I had thought through that. Like, we have an email, an ability to capture emails that announces, like, we thought, okay, let's compartmentalize these. Hey, here's a signup list for like the lean stuff. Here's a signup list for this product release. Here's just a general email. We thought of doing that. And I just realized it just got unwieldy to manage and the lists were growing stale and people were finding out and signing up for all the lists. Whereas now, like, my philosophy in email is obviously don't spam them. Don't, like, sends like one per day. It's just too much. I still haven't unsubscribed because we have Haas tools.
But I unsubscribe.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I just had to, very early on, we talked about the Speedio, the brother, their little robotic cell feeder. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested. A salesman came in, got me on the list. I rode that list for about 18 months. I'm like, I just know I'm not going to buy this. I'll come back later. But for me, really, my philosophy is just every email that goes out, it has to provide value. Like, every email that goes out has a coupon code. Every email that goes out, that potential coupon code is going to save you. It could potentially save you hundreds of dollars.
Yep.
And when it goes out, the other thing we thought of is doing like a beta list. No, we just can't do that because beta really requires a vetted tester that is going to provide feedback. And most people just say, oh, let me join a beta list so that I can get it first or at a discount. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather reward someone that has signed up on our list, has stayed on the list, and then the initial public offering of it, it's naturally discounted, like soft. Yep. So like the store was sold at a discount when it launched last fall. And then we put it on the website, and then we still haven't done any videos or any media. I think the next handful, maybe three out of the next seven videos that are coming out are going to be about the Max 4. And just keep it cohesive. Simplicity is one of our company principles. So I don't know. Those are my two cents. But can I go back to like your website? Have you ever looked at other e-commerce providers, Shopify?
We've looked a little bit. Shopify's out there, BigCommerce is out there. There's a lot of very capable platforms, and we've gradually grown up into what we have now.
Okay.
And before I would want to consider migrating to a different platform, I want a much better handle on whether we've actually squeezed all the juice out of the one we've got. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that we're not currently, but I don't have a real handle on the KPIs that I would need to know to even see that. So part of beginning to assess what we want to do with the website is starting to build website traffic and conversion rate KPIs into our weekly admin meeting and just saying, we're going to look at this number over and over again over time so that we can actually see if we're changing things, are changes having an effect?
Sure. Yeah.
And
well, really quick, the reason I ask is because I've tried to move e-commerce providers, let me think, significantly twice, and we've just stayed on our current platform. A, because we're used to it. B, because the others, okay, let me back up. We were on Shift4Shop, which was back then it was 3DCart. We tried to go to WooCommerce. This was about 6 years ago. WooCommerce, I'm sure it's more mature now, but it lacked some of the features, and some of them were the inability to correctly calculate shipping for multiple boxes, different destinations, international. I don't quite remember. So we actually launched it and it was open for like a week. And then we immediately shut it down and went back to what is Shift4Shop now. About 2 years ago, we tried to go over to Shopify. And Shopify is, I would say, one of the biggest or most powerful e-commerce platforms. But everything was a plugin. And by the time we had all these plugins stacked up, stuff stopped working. So the things that we needed barely worked, and the things we wanted were becoming problematic. And then suddenly the monthly bill was hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Yeah, and I wanted this one plugin for reporting, detailed reporting. It was $50 a month. And then you have multiple shipping things. That's $50 a month. And it just stacked. And we just said, nope, let's just go back to what works. We're going to tolerate the frustrations.
Yeah, certainly. There's going to be an upper limit on how much we can squeeze out of any individual platform and how much customization we want and how picky we are about UI, UX, and all those things will sort of decide for us when we run into that wall and can't go any further.
Yeah.
There are still plenty of things on our current site, on our current e-commerce platform that I know we can do better. And I want to go after those very intentionally, change them in a methodical way, see what the outcome of that is, just because I want to actually start applying lean in an intentional and consistent way to my website.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I'm not my customer. I don't buy things on my website. I only look at it from the admin side usually.
Yeah.
And the kinds of things that frustrate customers who never bother to email us because it's like, I'm just annoyed by this. I quit. I leave. That information I don't have, and I can't recreate it myself by wandering around the website pretending I'm a customer.
Okay, I've got a solution for you.
Undercover boss. I can't I can't do it.
You're going to love this.
Oh boy.
I think it's hotjar.com. So it's a website plugin. You can, depending on the level of subscription. What's that?
Heat mapping. Customer sessions.
Heat mapping, customer workflows. You can log in and see, oh, there's eight customers on our site. Let's follow this dude. And you literally follow his mouse. You're seeing what where he's going, where he's clicking. Or you could start backwards and say, okay, why are people exiting the checkout page? Checkout step two, you know, where they plug in their address. Are they just wanting to get a shipping quote? Why aren't they using the shipping quote estimator in step one? Did they get a shipping quote? Go, wait a minute. Well, after I plug in my actual address, it will went be up by $20 or down. So yeah, hotjar.com, we pay for the $100 a month. It's not something where it's worth $1,200 a year. So I wouldn't go with an annual subscription, But if you had it open for like 3 months, you get a good cross section of the data. So we'll make changes. We just like to see where people are clicking. Obviously, yep. Top of the fold, which is a newspaper term, but when you load a website, what do you see by default? That's where the majority of the traction is. We'll change button sizes, locations, colors to see if we have, we'll A/B test the site essentially month over month. But really powerful yep. tool. It's actually fun because you can sit there on your break, sipping coffee and just watching someone navigate through your site. So really cool.
And I'm sure you find out interesting things doing that. In a previous version of our website, we used a competing product to Hotjar called Lucky Orange.
Okay.
To do some of that. And it was interesting, but one of the challenges with website stuff is if you run a series of tests sequentially, one after the other, mm-hmm. first of all, if you change too many things at once and then customer behavior changes, you can no longer isolate which variable produced the change.
Exactly.
And if you do a bunch of individual changes sequentially, you are then testing on a different group of customers over a different time window. So testing things on our website in quarter one, when it's usually quiet, mm-hmm. and then testing other things on that same website in quarter four, leading up to Black Friday, you're going to get different customer behaviors, even if nothing changed on the site.
Yep.
And so I would love to have the time and resources to stand up a parallel site essentially and feed 50% of the visitors to one site and 50% to the other mm-hmm. and try taking those sites in two different directions to see if one trends up, one trends down, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even if we said for specific things, there are certain things we can test. We've done a better job cross-selling, upselling certain accessories and mm-hmm. things by changing how they're placed, how they're described, which images go with them. We've been able to see a noticeable bump in sales on certain relatively inexpensive accessories on our site just by being more intentional and thoughtful about where they show up and mm-hmm. what they're called and how we present that single image that the customer may see of it when it's in the also recommended sure. in their checkout.
Right.
And so recognizing that a little bit of thoughtfulness and a little bit of effort there mm-hmm. can make a noticeable difference in terms of the number of units of that little thing you sell in a week, in a month. If we do a better job of that across the board with our major products, that's a not insignificant potential amount of money.
Yeah.
And a not insignificant potential number of new customers that we would otherwise not capture. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I'm sure I'll have more about that in subsequent weeks. I really do want to play around with the idea of that product development transparency page. Mm-hmm. And I think there should be a single separate sign up, which is anytime you guys release anything new, mm-hmm. email me perpetually until I unsubscribe. Because there are certain things that we like, oh, we had a quick idea to do this or that thing and we released it. Mm-hmm. And it was such an off-the-cuff thing that it never was even on the product development list. It was never a big enough project to be in the development pipeline. And oftentimes when that happens, that's usually small things like we release a new fit for a magazine carrier. And like, yeah, that took a week to do, not even. We just... Right. Oh, we wanted to do that. We had enough requests for it. Let's just go ahead and get that done on a Friday and make it, test it over the weekend, release it the following week.
Yeah.
And I never want to email my entire list and say, hey guys, be like Chick-fil-A saying, hey guys, we've added one new sauce. Mm-hmm. Please come in. It's not, doesn't feel significant enough to justify bothering anybody about it.
Sure.
But
yeah,
I think that at the very least, the ability for customers to sign up and tell us what they're interested in mm-hmm. in real time will motivate me more
yeah.
to be thoughtful about prioritizing what I spend my development time on and be willing to get one thing mm-hmm. into the fast lane and get it across the finish line rather than gradually moving everything down the field a few steps at a time.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know if you publicly posted it or you sent me something and you had a post-it and it said prioritize finishing before starting. And yep. that's become one of our sayings around here. And it's like, yeah, hats off to Henry Holsters for that little post. And it's true.
I don't remember where I got that from, but that still is a note that's on the edge of my monitor.
I love
I'm sitting
it.
There designing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge. So speaking of being busy, we're both busy. Let's wrap. I got more to share in next week's episode.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jay.